In this talk, I'll be sharing some life experiences on the theme of radiating love, and I will do so in relation to the Buddha's Four Noble Truths. So, yeah, a very important and foundational teaching in Buddhism. So I'll start by just going through the Four Noble Truths, which are the truth of the truth of the suffering, the second one, the truth of the causes of the suffering, and the third one, the truth that there is an end to the suffering. And the fourth one, the truth of the path leading away from suffering. So I will not expound any of these truths or say anything more about them, really, but I hope I can share some light on them through my own experience. So I'm going to start by sharing with where I was before encountering the Dharma. So, well, both the Buddha and myself would agree that I was in suffering and dissatisfaction. So I felt alienated and unconnected with the world around me. I felt alone, even though I had close friends and family around me. And I felt empty, even though I didn't lack anything that was decisive for material comfort. And the days just felt meaningless, even though I had hobbies and interests and did well in school. So this was me starting to see the first noble truth more clearly, that seeing that the way I led my life was filled with dissatisfaction, or as the Pali word for it is, dukkha, seeing that dukkha was a part of my life. So what was the causes of this unsatisfactoriness? And the problem was very much due to a lack of something, but it was a lack of something that I wasn't very aware of existed at all at this point. So in a way, I lacked something without knowing what it was that I didn't have. So I think the biggest confusion was that I thought that it was a thing or a person or a place that could solve my issue of feeling empty. But it was something much, much more subtle. It was a quality, and a quality that I'll return to later on. So I did know that I didn't have something but which I needed, but I didn't know what it was that I didn't have. So I looked for it in all kinds of weird places. I was continuously grasping for things outside of me which I thought could fill my own inner existential poverty and make me happy and fulfilled. So I looked for happiness in girlfriends, in studies, in planning for a career, in music, in art, in parties, in alcohol, in food, in sex, and I couldn't find it. I simply wasn't happy. No matter how thoroughly I searched and how many stubborn attempts I tried, I could not find happiness or fulfillment in any of those things. So I wasn't happy when I had one of the things that I thought that I wanted to have, and I wasn't happy when I didn't have it. So this was me starting to see the second noble truth more clearly, the causes of my suffering. So it wasn't so much the things in themselves as my relation to them that caused me harm. That expecting happiness to be found in things or people outside of me, that it sort of could be given, that false view caused me pain. But outside of me, in places, in things, in activities, in purpose, that was where I thought I could find it. And that was where I always had looked and been taught to look ever since I was a kid. So having searched in all the places where I thought happiness was possible to be found, I had to ask myself, is it even possible to feel fulfilled and to be happy? And according to the Buddha, yes, the third noble truth says that there is a way, there is an end to suffering, and that there is a way to experience happiness and meaning and peace in life. So this is when I came in contact with the ideal, with the Buddha and with enlightenment. I came in contact with my highest potential, our highest potential of growth and development as human beings, the potential of awakening. And the Buddha Amitabha is one of the five archetypical Buddhas. He's an aspect of that enlightenment, and he represents the immense love of enlightenment. And one of the things that Amitabha does is turning greed into love, and not romantic love, but loving kindness, or as we heard yesterday, the sort of untranslatable word in Pali, metta. And I'll return to this in a bit, but before, I want to say something about how I came in contact with the ideal. So I came in contact with it first through reading about it, and then eventually Googling Buddhism in Stockholm and going to the center back there, and eventually just getting to know the people around the center that I just felt was onto something. Like they had figured something out. They had been able to make use of what I've been reading about and been able to embody that ideal to some extent, to embody the Buddha Amitabha to some extent. Yeah, because the way that I was met by some of the people there was a meeting of metta. I felt the radiation of loving kindness coming from them. And of course, not to an overwhelming degree from everyone at all the time, but it was much, much more there. It was much more prominent around the people, around the center, than it was from the circles that I usually spend time with at this point. And then eventually I started practicing the Metta Bhavana myself, and that had a very big impact on me. So, yeah, I'll read a quote by our teacher, Bhante Sangharachita, from Living with Kindness, where he expounds on the connection between metta, or loving kindness, and contentment, which points to something that just resonated with my own experience. So he says that feeling metta for oneself is the keystone of contentment. When you are contented, you can maintain your equanimity no matter in what circumstances you find yourself. And he continues, human beings need food, light, space, periods of peace and quiet, human companionship and friendship, and so on. We are naturally geared to look for the light in the world. But if you are contented, you can find the light in the world around you, even when you don't have everything you like. So that's Sangharachita, our teacher from Living with Kindness. So I hope that you can sort of start seeing the connection that I saw between the ideal, the Buddha Amitabha, metta, and contentment, and how I was in need of that. I did not find the light in the world around me, even though I had everything that was necessary of living an ordinary life. So this connection between self-metta and contentment was something that I was in deep need of. I was not happy with myself. I was not content. I felt empty and tried to fill that internal poverty with external stimuli, which guaranteed is a ticket to disappointment, because it will not work. I tried and nothing from outside could fill my own empty hole. And yes, it gave me some pleasure, and I could get distracted for a while, and that's fine. I'm still working on not beating myself up for wanting pleasure. And as Bhante says, we are naturally geared to look for delight in the world. So I read that partly as it's human. It's natural to look for pleasure and delight in the world. And there are healthy pleasures as well, so I'm not saying that pleasures is something to be afraid of. But if I rely on them, if I rely on pleasures to be a source of happiness, that's when I'm in danger, because eventually the pleasure will fade. Yeah, the pleasure will end, or I get used to it, and it turns out not to be as pleasurable anymore when it's just a habit. And strangely enough, the less I expect the world around me to give me, the more fully I can appreciate it. If I don't expect this person to fulfill me, the more fully I can enjoy the company of them. And if I don't expect something to come from a piece of music, the more fully I can appreciate the beauty of it. So in that sense, the more pleasure I get out of it. So it's a bit like a curtain that is being drawn away from a piece of art. Yeah, and I think a core aspect of this is just being less selfish, less self-centered. If I'm not self-centered, then I can open up to something much more bigger than my own interests. And that's in a way the very beginning of letting higher and richer dimensions of life unfold. And Vidyavachin talked yesterday a bit about the mystery of life, and I think we all got a taste of the depth and the vastness of this mystery that we're in. And we also heard in the Karaniya Metta Sutta that through the Metta Bhavana, that through the cultivation of loving kindness, we can enter an infinite stream, that if we just let it, which can see sound like something much more easier than it is, but if we just step out of the way from it, that can carry us all the way to enlightenment. So I saw that pleasures could not provide me with fulfillment and happiness. And I also saw the other side of it, the potential of inexhaustible inner richness. I saw Amitabha, infinite love, boundless metta for all living beings, equanimity and contentment. I saw the potential of not having to rely on the external world to fulfill me, and how much more effective I can be in the world and to the people around me if I'm not as self-centered around my own interests. And also how that, paradoxically enough, comes with a lot of pleasure and delight. So this led me on to the fourth questions. So how do I get there? How can I move closer to the ideal? And the Buddha says, through the Noble Eightfold Path, leading away from suffering. So this Noble Eightfold Path is the path that will lead us from suffering, from dukkha, from dissatisfaction, to happiness, meaning, peace, and delight. And I won't go into the Noble Eightfold Path very much, but our teacher, Sangharachita, describes the very beginning of this path with perfect vision. And my vision was by no means perfect, but it was a vision of something much more beautiful than I'd ever seen before. And seeing things in a different way can be very important, but that has to be laid out. It has to be expressed. It's all very good that I saw a way of experiencing life more fully, but very, very quick, that vision fades and old habit takes over. So how does one keep that vision alive? And that is what the rest of the Eightfold Path is about, trying to live that vision of our highest potential of growth more and more fully. And trying to live Amitabha out more fully is an endless task, but we can cultivate some of his qualities to some degree right here and now. And when I got in contact with Triratna, I got the tools for it. I got meditation techniques, I got material to study, I got supportive environments and conditions such as coming to Padmaloka on retreats. And I got friends to teach me, to support me in hardship, and to challenge me when I go astray. And yeah, I just got so much out from this moment. And the only way to properly pay back for it is by practicing it, by making use of what I have been given. And that is what I do, and that is what I will continue to do. And this is something that we all can do. It's all there for us, laid out. We just have to make use of it. So by cultivating metta, by being more loving and kind to ourselves, we can become more content. And we don't have to expect the world to give us something that it cannot offer. And then we don't have to be disappointed, and we can more easily share our inner resources and benefit others more effectively. And through that, we can appreciate this immensely rich mystery of what it means to be alive more fully. Yeah, we can more and more let Amitabha's qualities shine through us.